Velkommen til Radio Shalom. Vi har en udsendelse om USA og om, hvad der er sket i de sidste, jeg tror det er 87 dage under Mr. Trumps regering. Og vi har to gæster i studiet via en internetforbindelse, og det er Adam og Alan Pertman. Vi skulle have den tredje gæst, som var lidt mere Trump-orienteret, så begge her altså, de identificerer sig som centrum, venstre, centrum, midt, ja. Og vi kommer til at snakke engelsk. So, welcome, Mr. Alan and Mr. Adam Pertmans. Welcome to Radio Shalom. I have just presented, introduced the program and told our listeners about you. And I think we could start if you present yourself and tell your whatever you want to tell to enlighten our listeners about who you are. Alan?
Yes, good morning. I'm Alan Pertman. I'm a professional electronics engineer. I'm not a political person. I have opinions, but I keep them mostly to myself. My friends and family think of me politically as center-right, perhaps, but I'm a very confused, conflicted at this time and these times, a registered Democrat, although I'm free to vote in a general election across the board. By the way, and maybe it's relevant, I love Denmark, I love Copenhagen, my favorite country since the heroic accomplishments and actions that Denmark did during the Second World War.
Thank you very much. And
I am Adam Pertman, Alan's younger brother. My history is I was a journalist for over 20 years, most of them with the Boston Globe. Among the things I covered were the White House, Congress, national politics and economics, as well as international diplomacy. Currently, I head a national not-for-profit organization that deals with child welfare and adoption, children and families. And I am also a communications and strategy consultant, helping organizations, healthcare organizations, other not-for-profit, sometimes for-profit organizations with their communications and strategy. So they overlap. And much of my work does overlap. So some of my strategy and communications work is in the child welfare realm, but not all of it.
So now that Trump has been in office for over 80 days, getting close to 100, and has introduced a lot of confusion and fear and
anxiety
in all over the world, how does it affect your daily life? I think maybe not personally, but as citizens, as ordinary people who go to the shop, buy food, who have families to provide for, and, you know, worries about everyday life. Alan.
Yes.
What would you say?
I would say economically, my family, myself, are not yet impacted in any significant way, but it's a frustrating situation because I don't want to be overly critical, but he is a Trump is a mover and shaker, and when you move and shake, mistakes will be made. So some of the hiccups are expected, but his actions are beyond beyond the my expectations. So I'm confused and conflicted. Some things he does, I can in fact support, but a
Like,
lot of goings on is
what's an example
difficult.
of something you support, Al?
Yeah.
Well, I thought the immigration situation needed attention. I don't want to belabor the point, but
No, I think most people agree with that.
yeah, right. So that's an obvious one. I'm very comfortable with his views and as expressed about the Israeli situation, which is near and dear to my heart. My wife is an Israeli-born lady, a Sabra. I'm attached to Israel emotionally, totally, with family there, etc. And these are important considerations, but on the other hand, in a balance, there are actions I see that maybe we'll get into a little bit later that make me question whether Trump himself is clear on what he's doing, and that's my biggest frustration.
So, one, I would argue that most people, and probably in your own family, Alan, have indeed been impacted, if for not, no other reason than grocery prices and the stock market. I mean, most people I know have lost a lot of money. Maybe it'll come back one day, maybe it won't. To answer your question, Joanna, I'm going to meld my professional and personal because the impact. And I'm doing this, and I thought about it. Do I want to share my personal details? And I'm going to share some because I think my own story. And I'm an affluent American. I'm an old white guy who has benefited enormously from everything that this country has to offer. And I'm severely impacted. And I have to say, if I am, and I actually know people who are in. Have lesser means who have been are being devastated at this moment, and by policy and economics. But I just to illustrate how pervasive the impact really is, to some even someone like me. So in no particular order, I've lost clients because they don't have federal funding anymore, and these are important projects to do with health, to do with child welfare, to do with real substantive. Stuff that affects millions of people's lives, not my own projects, but the programs that are being cut affect millions, and including my own clients. And so some projects have just gone away, some are scaled back. And these are things that, help people. But from my perspective as a consultant, I've lost business, so I've lost income. And it's harder to fill those gaps because there's less federal funding is pervasive, not necessarily directly, but enabling projects, enabling matching funds, enabling various other initiatives. Anyway, so there's a lot of money that's dried up that a lot of people don't have anymore, and that includes hundreds of thousands who have been laid off from the federal government, and the ripple effects of all of that. They don't have jobs. They have mortgages and car payments, and they don't have income. So my personal income. I have a child with disabilities who gets some federal support that's probably going to go away. That will. Certainly impact me because I'm not going to let my kid suffer. I have clients whose research projects into things like Alzheimer's, other diseases, cancer, etc., are suspended. They don't know if they can do anything. The Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, is not putting out regular reports now on various health issues. They don't know what to do at the other end. They depend on that guidance and information. And some research, some real number of research projects have been halted. Others are being started that don't make any sense. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wants them because he doesn't believe in vaccines. So we have new projects that are designed really strange uses of money. What else? Oh, and I have a son who is trans, and he now lives afraid every day. Because the government literally is trying to put him out of existence. There are no places for him, not bathrooms and not legal papers. So so in lots of ways I feel, and again there, but that's just, he lives in a safe place and he's okay and he's strong and thank God for that. But there are lots of people who are not strong. And so trans people are getting beat up in the streets without any reporting on it. So it a lot of impact in a lot of ways. And that's, tiny microcosm. It's just little me. And this is happening in every city in America. People are anxious. People are afraid. I think that's part of the strategy. If people are off balance and afraid and 100 things are coming at them a day, you can only keep up with so much. And so the impact, I think, socially is more extensive than people yet understand, but it's starting to come into it's starting to become clear.
So, what I don't understand is that, if I understand you right, is that the people who have less are affected most because they have
Oh, absolutely,
no
absolutely.
cushioning. But
Correct.
his base is actually people who have least. I mean, his base, as I understand it, is workers, poor farmers, unemployed. How come he can convince them? How does he do it? I mean, this is part that is kind of so abstract to me. Maybe you can shed some light on it. Why does he have so much support when he does this
Alan,
to
you
people?
first.
Yeah, Adam, why don't you tackle that one that's closer to your
Yeah. So I want to
experience?
say he seems to have a base of around roughly 40%, no matter what he does. I mean,
Why?
literally, no matter
Why
what he
no
does.
matter? What
Well,
kind?
I can tackle it. I can't answer it. I can give you some
Okay.
factors.
Yeah.
So remember, I think I know how hyperbolic this sounds, but I believe it. I don't know how else to explain it. I think we're in a cult-like situation. People have attached some level of deity to this guy, where they really believe that they've become true believers. Remember, in Jonestown, years and years ago, people drank poison Kool-Aid because their cult leader told them to. They were willing to literally kill themselves. Cults are a different mindset. To answer your question, how does that cult form? I think there are a lot of aggrieved people who feel this country, this is the lower income people you're talking about, a lot of aggrieved people who, for reasons of race, economy, social wokeness, so to speak, they feel left behind. They feel like, I'm not included in that conversation. It does not apply to me. It doesn't help me. I have conservative values. The values of this country were becoming, I think, less and less conservative. That's one reason why he's tackled diversity, equity, and inclusion. That was becoming more of a norm. Under Biden, the federal government was under orders throughout the government to institute DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think people felt like, especially white people, I mean, those are disproportionate white males, disproportionately for Trump. It felt like it doesn't include me. It doesn't talk about me. But I think that 40% is more than that. I think there are certainly some of this is tiny unraveling because of the stock market and the tariffs. But a lot of wealthy people supported Trump straight up because he gave them tax cuts. And they made no bones about it, and they stuck with him because whatever other issues they have with him, they did good for them. So,
But now they're
sort of
losing money.
self-centered. It's rich and poor, and a lot in the middle. A lot of people feel aggrieved. A lot of, again, for reasons of race, and we can talk about racism, we can talk about economic disparities and so forth. And all of those are factors, and they add up to a cadre of people who, and I want to add just one other thing. There is an international element of this. There are a lot of governments that are going to the right. There, and a lot of
Yes,
that is,
true.
as Alan pointed out earlier, is immigrant driven. And people feel like they're being, quote, invaded, and Trump adopted that language, I think, pretty deliberately and effectively. So I think it's a bunch of factors, and they add up. They add up to some core number of people who have very different self-interests or perceived self-interests. And I think that forms his base.
Yes, and
Let me add a comment to what Adam was saying. Trump won the last election convincingly, but not overwhelmingly.
Oh, not 1.5%.
There you
That's all.
go. And
That's all.
a good deal of the vote that he got was from people who really were voting against the Biden candidacy, more so that was my case
There
also.
wasn't
Also
Biden
went
running.
directly for Trump, so it's
Even
an even
worse,
split in
Kamala
the country,
Harris.
actually.
Yeah,
But
let me just say, I think Kamala Harris, they made a lot of mistakes, the
should be a
Democrats ran.
man.
Yeah.
They should have taken a
Anyway,
man.
they did not run the campaign that they could have. Biden waited way too long to pull out, way too long. She didn't have enough time to get traction. I think a black woman in this country is still, a lot of people weren't ready for that. And they didn't have time to get ready, so to speak. It was sort of thrust upon them. And I agree, certainly agree with Alan that there was a anti-democratic element. But the biggest element from every indicator, was economics. It boiled down in commercials here to the price of eggs, which is now even higher. But economics, people, I felt it every time I went to the grocery store. I said to my wife, I'm the shopper. I said to when I came back, I said, I see why people don't want the status quo. It's really expensive. So economics drove a lot of it as well.
Yeah, I have been in the United States in Chicago last year, and I was really shocked by the price levels. It's so much more expensive. But we also had this huge inflation wave, like 15% or something like that. But Danish government succeeded in stopping the inflation very quickly, and some other places they didn't. So, like, I visited Poland, they have high inflation up to this day. And their prices are getting close to Danish prices while the wages are still under half. So, it's not the only country. But I hear what you say. You can see it. Turkey, Hungary, Israel, they have this nationalist. Poland had it for
Absolutely.
years. But another thing I don't understand is that. The
Italy as well.
Republican Party used to be the moralistic, I don't know, even
Yeah, the
prudish.
pro-family
Yeah,
part.
and now they have a liar, a cheater, a
A
philanderer,
felon, a convicted
and a
felon.
convicted felon, and it doesn't touch them that they're electing a person like that. It really shocks me how the same people, if Obama did just 100th of the things that
Oh, he would have been impeached by this
he would
Republican
have
Congress.
been lynched, at least. So what's happening now in is there any movement in his base about frustration about the prices, the developments.
I
I think
think we're
again,
going. You go.
yeah, again, it's the fact that the way I see it, Trump won the election, because the winning margin came from a vote that was not for him. It was against the Democratic candidate at the time. The victory was convincing, but not at all overwhelming.
Well, I'm less apt to use the word convincing, but in any case, he won. What I think sometimes get obscured is just because he won doesn't mean everyone agrees with everything he said, right? So, that's what the administration says. Well, he won, and therefore we can defy a court order because we said we would. And so, you know, people voted for that. Well, they didn't vote for that. They voted, you know, to Alan's mm-hmm. point, you know, against the Democrat, or they voted the price of eggs. They didn't necessarily vote. Well, I wanted him to do, I made a list of things I thought were worth at least mentioning. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make, because I'm a very editor friendly person. So I want short and sweet bullet points.
Please.
And I have 4 pages. And that was off the top of my head. 3 pages was off the top of my head. And then I Googled to see, did I miss anything significant? People didn't vote for every one of those things. They just didn't. They didn't see it coming. They didn't understand it. They didn't expect it. What Alan said, you know, he didn't expect everything that's coming our way. No one did. Literally no one thought, including his own supporters, thought he would do as many things as extensively and as authoritarianly, if that's a word, as it's turning out he's operating. They didn't vote for every single one of those things. They voted for whatever their cause was, whatever their passion was, whatever their issue or partisan.
So how come he still has such support?
Say it again.
How come he still has such high support?
This is the mystery of our lifetimes. I mean, there was a story in the Washington Post and New York Times this morning. They interviewed some Trump supporters who are being hit. You know, their prices are higher, their stocks are going lower. And they were in the demographic, Joanna, that you were describing. And, he says that it'll get better over time, and I believe him. I mean, it's this faith in the guy. The guy is going to fix it. And he you know, I want to say to his credit, I don't like crediting him with anything, but he's in some ways phenomenally uninformed. I mean, beyond understanding, uninformed. On the other hand, he's really clever. And there is somebody in his shop is strategic. I mean, they fired the inspector general, the people who oversee agencies to make sure there is no waste and abuse. I mean, that's their job. And he fired them first, and then he went after the agencies because then there was no watchdog. So there is strategy behind what this guy does. So, and I don't know if he can't know enough to be expert in the hundreds of areas where he's putting out executive orders. So he's got some smart people working strategy with and for him, making all of this happen.
Adam, what frustrates me and fascinates me at the same time is as far as his continuing support goes, is of course the things you mentioned, but in addition, of course, his inner circle are handpicked people on the basis of loyalty to him, period.
Period.
However, there is a cadre of accomplished, seasoned, experienced politicians in the Republican ranks.
Yep.
Nobody's standing up and,
no.
You know, saying...
Nobody's standing up.
That puzzles me to no end.
Exactly.
So let me add one factor that I want to address that, but before I forget, one other factor. Years ago, remember that Kellyanne Conway, a woman who was Trump's campaign manager and then a senior advisor in his first term at the White House, said that they were going to focus on alternative facts. So they created a whole new ecosystem of information And this speaks to that 40%. A very large percentage of them watch Fox News and a couple of other smaller sort of far right networks. And they don't get the same facts, end quotes, the same facts as we do. This conversation we're having is very different if you tune into Fox. It's all about his accomplishments and how effective he's been and how strategic and long term these tariffs will be successful. They intake a different set of information. And so it makes sense that they
So they
come
live
to
in a
different
bubble,
conclu
in an
they come
echo
to different
chamber.
conclusions. I think it just makes sense. As for the members of Congress who are, and by the way, I think the Democrats have done a crappy job, as it not at
They're
the
totally
Republican realm,
lost.
but there was a really terrific comment from some, again, Republican. I try carefully to only quote Republicans because the Democratic response is expected. But a Republican pundit who said, we have to stop talking like the democracy is under threat and start acting like it. And that's what the Democrats have not done effectively. They're doing the talking, they're doing pretty well.
But they're
The acting
paralyzed
is
in a
not so
way.
much. The Republicans, I think, have demonstrated for years, starting with the first Trump term, because before Trump, with George W. Bush and predecessors, there was dissent on the right, and it was what the body is supposed to do. They debate and they legislate. They don't debate or legislate in the Republican-led Congress. And I think it's almost entirely, not, I'm sure not entirely, a fear for their jobs. Trump has proven again and again that he'll put up a primary opponent and they won't have a job. And they will then argue. And then I'm at least the same person. The person Trump puts up against me will be even farther right. And then that's what you'll get. And so they rationalize this insane behavior, which entirely fuels and enables this authoritarian takeover. I mean, there is it, when we talk about the changes that are happening domestically and internationally, we're not saying Congress passed legislation that would defund the U.S. AID. No, Trump did that with the stroke of a pen. Congress passed legislation that defunds children's nutrition program. No, Trump did that with the stroke of a pen. I'll do one more because child welfare is my thing. In the last resolution that was passed by Congress, the Trump sanctions that now, and they will sanction all everything he's doing in an upcoming bill. It's working its way through Congress, but it's just sanctioning what he's doing. It's not creating, debating, legislating, discussing, compromising. None of that stuff happens anymore. And what it enables is an authoritarian who rules almost entirely by one man's fiat, the executive order. Hundreds and hundreds of executive orders. Everything that you see, almost literally everything that we've seen, is the result of one stroke of one person's pen and not a legislative or judicial process. And so that weakness, that lack of courage, whatever it is that those legislators don't have are exhibiting, has real consequences. It enables Trump to do exactly what he sought to do, which is be at the center of everything.
So where is Democratic Party in all this? Are they
Starting to get its
paralyzed?
voice, but not there yet.
Do they
Yes,
have any
beg your pardon. What's the question?
Where is the Democratic Party in all that? Do they have a leadership? Do they have somebody who can contradict, who has a voice, or are just crying in the background?
My thoughts are that I'm not as versed in the intricacies of mechanics of how the Democratic Party can articulate their opposition, etc. But the very same thing that Adam just explained, how authoritatively one person is making so many significant changes, that could work against him. If the Democrats can get their stuff together, in the next election, because it's not really entrenched in the system, all these executive orders. But it's going to be up to the democratic machinery to take advantage of that. That could work against Trump's agenda.
So, I'll answer it a slightly different way. I agree with what Alan said, if they can get it together. I think a lot of things. I think that it will take more than just rhetoric. I think that there are more and more demonstrations in cities across America. They're not so big yet. I believe they will grow. I hope they grow. Because I think grassroots is the only place where this has a chance of being, I don't know if stopped. I don't think stopped. I don't think there's any stopping this. He's going to be in power for 4 years, and he's still got executive power. He uses literally every day. People cannot keep up with it. I don't know what it feels like from other countries' perspective, but. Literally every day, very consequential things come out of that guy's pen. And you can't keep up with it. Stuff, as I was Googling, what are the relevant issues, I hit stuff I forgot about because it was 2 weeks ago. And because 20 other things have happened in that 2 weeks, you literally can't keep up with it. I mean, this list is, I thought that when they snatched people off the street, men in hoods, on the streets of America, snatched a college student off the street and put her in a prison in Louisiana. I thought that would be, people are going to mobilize. That's unacceptable. That's the stuff you see in bad movies. And now we have it on the streets of America, and it becomes normalized. And so, yes, I think that something has to happen, and I think it will, whether it's sufficient. To really, I don't think it's going to reverse very much because it's too, the change is too extensive and too deep. You can lay off 200,000 people, and I think that's roughly what they've done. And what that does, and close down the education department, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Building it back up is harder. Shutting it down is much easier. I mean, tell people go home. To rejuvenate it is a much harder. Ordeal and it's expensive, and they're go and the way that the economics are being rejiggered because it's not just social programs, it's economics. It's going to be harder to fund all those things. The income is not going to be, the revenue, excuse me, is not going to be there, and that's deliberate. I mean, we're going to see this year sometime a massive tax cut for rich people. They got to pay for that somewhere. And that money will come from the closing of the education department and from laying off 200,000 people. And they will make, they're already in plan, there's legislation Trump written or endorsed to cut back on Medicare, Medicaid, big social programs to pay for that tax cut because it's hugely expensive. And that money won't be there to rebuild. This will have a very consequential presidency. It's gonna, however Democrats find their voices, whatever people do in the streets, and I think that at least one House of Congress will flip next year, if for economic reasons, if no other. But the damage is done. I mean, this is. This and he's not finished. We're not even at 100 days. He's not going to stop. This is part of a longer term plan. And one last thing, and I'll shut up. And that is that simultaneous to all of this, election laws are being changed by again by executive order, not by legislation,
Can
which
you
is
do
what's
that?
supposed to happen. And so, for example, you're going to have for federal elections, you're have to going to have to show citizenship. Old people don't have that paper. Poor people don't have that paper. There is, the incidence of voter fraud is something on like 0.023%, something like that. So they're fighting a problem that doesn't exist, but they're doing it with for a reason because the people who are statistically most likely to be affected are people who vote Democrat. So they're stacking the de they're trying to stack the decks. So we'll see what happens. And last thing is that this guy is an egomaniac of the first order. I mean, I work with a lot of therapists and social workers and mental health professionals, and to the one, including one who's a real Trumpy, but across the ideological spectrum, they think he's mentally ill. And I couldn't agree more.
He's
He's a bit
signs of
sociopathic. He's
sociopath.
got some egomaniacal disorder. And so he's not making all these changes just because I want to improve America.
No.
I want to make America great. He's doing it because he's Donald Trump, wants to
Because
be
he
at the center of
can.
the universe. And if that's true, how willingly is he going to give up power if
There's
it's
the
all about him
next
and power?
problem. Next problem. You want to comment on that, Alan?
Just to add that things can get a little more psychological and more complex. To give an example, the illustration Adam gave of people in a hood accosting this foreign student, etc., etc. I personally was really so upset and offended by the fact that a good number of foreign students were active in a lot of the anti-Israeli activities on campus that I don't really care whether the person who stopped them on the street was wearing a hood or not,
Wow, really?
but they zeroed
I don't
out.
want to live in the country you rule.
But by and large, I'm conflicted because I'm suspicious of Trump's frame of state of mind for same reasons that Adam just pointed out.
What do you think about his approach to Smithsonian Institute? I mean, it's the pride of America. Everybody knows this is source of knowledge and culture and wisdom and the authority in many fields.
And research, by the way,
And research,
a
yes.
very important part of
Science,
Smithsonian.
yeah. So what do people, I mean, is the country divided in people who are educated, knowledgeable, enlightened, and Trumpists? Are there no, I mean, no response in his base, in among his voters, to the destruction, to the culture, to the social system, to the economy, to the image of United States? I mean, in long term,
Alan, you want to go first?
no, yeah, you go ahead. This
Well, I
Smithsonian
mean,
is not my.
again, all of this harkens back to what I was observing about strategy. The Smithsonian stuff is about changing history. The Smithsonian stuff is, what are the exhibits? What do we show the visitor, literal visitors, and the world about America? They're changing the signs, they're changing history, literally, in the Smithsonian. They're saying what you can do research on and what you can't. And that go but this is where the strategy comes in. But that's true in the medical world. They're cutting off research for all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's I don't understand it at all. And I think and that's probably part of the game. I mean, to address your question, not answer it, Joanna, I think a lot of it is deliberate efforts to sow confusion, anxiety, fear, so that people can't focus on everything at once. So there are people worried about what are they doing in the Smithsonian, what are they doing at the Center for Disease Control, what are they doing in this place, what are they doing that? And meanwhile, they're changing voting rights. And meanwhile, they're abolishing the Department of Education. And meanwhile, these things are happening that will be entrenched for a very long time. So I don't, I just, no one I know, the smart people on television, They're all saying, I don't know why you did that. And they're specialists in their fields, who have been doing it for 20, 30 years, who you used to think were sage and could provide insights. And they're sitting there saying, I don't know why you did that. And they're anxious, but and that's the so they're confused, and I think that's part of the game. And they're anxious because those academics, among the other things that are happening, is grants, $1 billion of grants to universities are being cut off. The research that they do, the professors they hire, and it has real long-term implications. I think already foreign applications to American colleges, we're talking about the best and the brightest, right? From around the world who wanted to come to American university. They're not applying to American universities. They're going to England. They're going to France. They're going to go to other countries. We're going to lose that. And the professors at these universities are going elsewhere. They're going to Canada. So there's a real brain drain that has potential long, and in the medical profession, researchers, they can't necessarily do their work in this country or in the state that they live in. So, there's real deep, deep, long potential negative impact of all of this.
Any comment, Ellen?
I'm basically listening to Adam on that particular aspect of the impact.
So the next thing I wanted to ask you about is the trade war, especially with China. The comments that I read point out that it will be destructive for American economy and the access to the rare sources that only can be sourced from China will be limited.
And Greenland.
Yeah, but yeah, and that a lot of production of American cars is just kind of assembly lines where the pro the this elements are produced abroad, so the cars will be effectively more expensive in America because of these tariffs on China. What is your perspective on that?
Well, I'm not an economist. I can't be too analytical about it, but I think much of what Trump is broadcasting about dealing with China economically is just his way of setting the stage for what may actually happen and kind of creating an environment where emotionally and analytically the things he says up front are just generalizations. I don't believe he has 125% tariff plans in mind for China.
Oh, it's happening. You can believe it. It's real.
I think
But
it's
I don't believe that's necessary. It could turn into 25% in a week's time. So it's just setting the stage that, hey, I'm really ticked off. I'm upset with how China's dealing with us, etc. And the plea that he's making to the country that a lot of our economic partners have been kind of milking the United States, that has an appeal because it has a grain of truth as well. And nobody wants to be taken advantage of. But how you approach it, his style, his management style, his negotiating style, etc., everything just comes down to a deal that he thinks he's still strong enough, the country's strong enough to offer a deal in the end that will both placate any unfair exploitation of United States and not be as gross as it as he makes it sound up front. So it's a lot of threat waving before the serious discussions.
Well, I agree with part of that. I think his MO, certainly from The Art of the Deal on, his book, is to bring out the big bat, start hitting people over the head, and then say, "What would I mean?" He's a bully, and then say, "What do you give me to stop?" I heard an analogy again on Fox yesterday, the day before, that he's the arsonist who lit the house on fire and then wants credit for calling the fire department. So, I mean, the problem is that approach may work in business. I mean, there's not strong evidence, but may work in business. And that's some people's perceptions. And that's why some people like him. They think he's a really good business guy. I mean, he's declared bankruptcy, what, three, five times? The evidence is not real strong that he's great at
No.
business. But that is the perception, and I get that. But business is not government. Business is not diplomacy. Different factors come into play. Soft diplomacy is critically important in the world. It's why it's primarily why the U.S. is as influential, not powerful, but influential as it has been around the world. It is programs like USAID programs, that are being cut. Countries where we have been facilitating, disease prevention, including AIDS, don't have that money anymore. Those countries are not going to be as warm and fuzzy to us. There's no question about that. So it loses some influence. And the economic part, to your question, the economic part, look, tariffs are being built in for the whole world, not just for China. China's just the biggest chunk. And even if Alan's right and he's just playing games and it goes to 25%, business communities don't know how to deal with uncertainty at this level. If you don't know, if you're a business owner, small or large in America, and maybe there's going to be 125% tariff on goods from Vietnam, from China, maybe it's going to be 25%. I don't know how to do a supply chain purchase with that uncertainty. He wants factories to come back to America, which, by the way, takes years to develop and build and market a factory, not overnight. And if you're one of the people considering building that factory, how do you do that when you don't know where the stock market's going to be? How, ergo, your funding. Small Business Administration is getting funds cut. How do you start a business, a factory, if you don't know whether the funding is there for it or how long it's going to stay there for it? How do you, so this has enormous, and that's just in this country, this has a trade war. Affects everybody, affects every country. And for sure, it increases the prices to consumers of Americans, even if it's only 25%, it's more than you're paying today. And even if the company eats half of that, you're only going to pay 10, 15% more than you do today. And the goods that are manufactured in the US that he wants to bring back to the US, we don't have workers making $3 an hour. Those goods made in the US are going to cost more, straight up. And so and everywhere else. So this is going to be an expensive proposition, no matter how this plays out. It has I'm not an economist either, but I hear the economists from left, right, and center saying this is a mess. And we don't it, worse than it's going to be bad, they say, I don't know how it's going to turn out. And that uncertainty, 100% of economists will tell you, that uncertainty is the devil in business. And I'm in business as well. The uncertainty about what clients I have and when, I don't know how to run a business that way.
I've heard an expert say that when you want to make millions of iPhones, you can gather one room of people who can do the work, the physical work. that is required, because it's not, I mean, Chinese are not anymore people who are weaving the cotton and sewing the t-shirts. They're working in electronic factories. They're qualified, and they have to do very precise work, and a lot of it. And they say you can gather a group of people who can do it in United States, and maybe you can fill one football field with them. But in China, you have 100 football fields filled with people who are qualified to do the work that they do for United States and for the rest of the world. I mean, all iPhones, all Android phones, everything is produced in United States. No. Car parts, we don't have the knowledge how to do it. We don't have the people qualified. And you don't want to have this amount of work imported to your countries because you're not able to produce it. So
yeah, well, that's another important point, that we have a lot of factory jobs right now. Not that it's a big factory economy, but there are a lot that are unfilled. I mean, they just aren't workers. A lot of them were filled by immigrants, some of them not legal, and they're not going to be filled. I mean, so we're going to, you know, under the Trump scenario, we're going to have more factories, but there's no evidence that we have sufficient labor force to staff those factories.
And
Adam, but where is the Republican establishment, not the guys who voted for the but the Republican establishment, the senior people that were elected, not selected,
hiding in a corner, hiding in a corner.
Yeah,
that's an interesting development here. There's no check and balance kind of within.
Right. There is no check and balance. And it, to your point about checks and balances, it's scarier than just the legislature literally giving up its function in government. I mean, they don't pass legislation. They don't debate. They don't. None of that happens anymore. But it's also in the courts. And that's even arguably even more precarious and threatening, because not just hints, there are examples of the Trump administration defying court orders or circumventing or pretending they didn't apply or we didn't know that. And, oh, the guy was in El Salvador by the time it happened, so it doesn't affect it by U.S. law, you know, stuff that legal scholars, it's not real. If that continues, then there are no checks and balances. Then it really is, you know, everything centralized in one place.
To have a dictatorship.
I think we're over the line now. I mean, when there is no legislation, when everything that happens is according to what one guy wants and signs a paper for, I don't know what to call that.
So how do people feel about Trump's relationship with Putin?
Mystified again. Alan, go for it.
Well,
you're watching the file.
Can you see why I spent a good deal of time in anticipation of this conversation? I spent a good deal of time looking for somebody who's anchored in the Republican way of thinking. I couldn't find that person. I couldn't find that person among people I know and trust, etc.
So your country.
So as far as his relationship with Putin, my own understanding is, Trump and the Republican establishment.
Alan, would you look at the camera?
Yes. Yeah. They realized that Trump and his cadre realized that Putin is not an average country or even above average country. Putin is heading a country that could obliterate this country with his weapon arsenal. So you just handle that guy differently. And that's why this appearance of sudden accommodations and taking sides and with
Subservience.
Putin is there. That's what's driving those decisions. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that, for lack of a better way to put it, I think Putin is a role model for Trump. He likes the idea of a strong. He likes Orban. He likes, through Musk, he liked the right wing semi-Nazi party in Germany. I mean, this is the authoritarian model is appealing to him, and we are indeed reproducing it in this country, along with having oligarchs. Look at the White House cabinet and the people who were up on the stands when Trump was being inaugurated. It's people who in other countries we would call oligarchs. In our country we call them billionaires. But this is the structure that he is comfortable with and is emulating. Whether there's an element of it that is, nuclear deterrent related, it may be. Maybe not. The evidence, he also likes Kim Jong Il, rather. I mean, he likes right wing dictator kind of guys, whether it's Viktor Orban or Putin. I think he's simpatico with them. I know we're making this up because none of us can read his mind, but it also sure feels like Putin's got something on him. But we'll never know.
I was thinking, he's in my eyes, he's a sociopath, and so is Elon Musk. How do you view this relationship between these two cuckoos?
They're rich cuckoos who are
Yes.
enriching themselves further.
It's so terrifying, in my view, that two psychos rule the world.
I told my wife the day that that he plucked Elon to do his dirty work for him. I said to my wife, "The world's richest man and the world's most powerful man are now a team. This cannot be a good thing." And it's not a good thing. So here's my construct of thinking about this, and it may be right and may be wrong. I just don't know. I can't know. I think that they're very, I mean, Elon Musk has lost something like $80 or $100 billion to the stock market since Trump came in. And that seems like a lot of money to me, and he's still the real world's richest man. How much can he have? But anyway, so he's lost a lot of money. But what he's also done is established business contacts and going to get tax breaks that I think will be far more valuable. It's worth the price
Contracts.
of admission for him. I think they're doing, and Trump is talking about having a repository for cyber, what am I looking for? Cyber currency. Well, his kids have, his sons, and I think wife, maybe his daughter, but are now invested heavily in a new cyber currency business. So the business that Trump regulates, Trump regulates, right? I mean, there are regulatory commissions, but he's putting them out of business. And I think it's mostly to centralize power around him. So the businesses that Trump regulates include ones that his kids are into. I wonder what he's going to do for, he's probably going to screw his kids and do really harsh things, don't you think? So I think they're creating an atmosphere and the infrastructure for being very, very good to Elon Musk, and everybody says he's going to get out of this Doge thing, and go back to business. And no doubt he will have done his job, and I don't mean just in decimating government, but in establishing. So just by way of example, so he now has a what's his Skylink, whatever his business that business is now going to India because Trump talked to the head of the Prime Minister of India and got Elon in the door. So They're establishing. Trump is going to leave office much richer than he went in, you know. And the conflicts of interest are mind-boggling. The one I just cited with cybercurrency is one example, but of many. He's also literally selling tennis shoes and watches, and oh, now there's a 12-inch talking doll of Donald Trump saying wise things, literally. I mean, he's selling all this stuff. He's president of the United States. It's bizarre. And in any other world, again, to your question, Joanna, what do people think of it? I don't know what they, how can you watch all of this happen and think this is normal or sane? Or that it's not conflicts of interest. It's prima facie conflicts of interest. But again, they were wise, they were strategic. They got rid of the inspectors general first. There's nobody there who says who to stand up and say, "Hey, that's a conflict of interest." And he's gutting other agencies, regulatory agencies, and so forth, or just throwing the Democrats out and keeping only his own appointees. So, you know, the infrastructure is there not just to deal with the economy, not just to change our democracy, not just to rattle the world, but to enrich the people he wants to enrich.
It's a very depressing view.
It's a depressing view, and I got 3 pages stuff we haven't even talked about
Okay, enlighten me. What do you have in your 3 pages?
yet. Okay, I mean I literally have 3 pages of stuff. So we haven't talked about Ukraine. We haven't talked about we did the
Israel. Israel.
about Israel.
Well,
We
let's say
haven't talked
Israel.
about the end of child abuse and neglect prevention programs. We haven't talked about child care, elderly care, and disability programs. We haven't talked about firing the firing generals, literally firing the chief of staff, not the chief of staff, but the I'm lapsing the top general, the of the US, firing them and putting in someone who's got fewer qualifications than any previous
I know
head
there
of
was
the
the scandal
armed
about
forces.
the secret
The same is true
information.
with most of his cabinet picks are people who have literally zero experience in the area that they are overseeing. A couple that are qualified, one that really stands up to mind is the Treasury Secretary, who is 100% behind Trump, is a gay man who's married to another man. How he can be a part of an administration wants to dismantle his life is a mystery to me, but it's only one of many mysteries embedded. But so there are anti-vaccine stuff, the measles outbreak in Texas. Measles was eradicated, and now it's back, and it's in a bunch of states. At least 3 children have died. And Kennedy is there saying, take vitamin A. They know that the vaccine works. It eradicated measles. There's a lot of stuff
I think that
that we haven't
Kennedy stepped back on that on the measles things and advised people to get jabs
It's
because
very, and he's in charge. Remember that he is in charge of the of child welfare in America, of health care in America. I mean, of very, very consequential areas of everybody's life. HHS, Health and Human Services, it touches the lives of every single American in one way or another, every single one. And you talked about Musk and Trump being, you know, unstable people. Kennedy has admitted that, you know, he has a brain worm and he killed a bear or something and left it in Central Park. And I mean, he's a weirdo. And he's in charge of health care for America. It's just very strange.
Mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling.
So you mentioned Israel. This is something that is ringing in everybody's ear. What do you think? Do you think that he will support Israel consistently? Can we
Well,
trust?
it's
I do. I
ironic.
think so. I think so.
It's ironic to me for whom the Israeli welfare is foremost and important, that having an ally like Trump now is not necessarily an advantage on a global stage at all. So,
Yeah, you can
you
say
know,
with friends
if
like
half
that, you
of
don't need enemies, right?
Yeah, right. With friends like that, who needs an enemy, exactly. So that suddenly turned itself on its own head, that type of support.
It's a
But
good point. Very
certainly,
good point.
talking up a good storm, as far as support for Israel.
So,
So
are you done?
it's
Sorry.
all kind of consistent with the downside of having an ally like Trump, in that it could change overnight. So
Oh,
since
yeah,
Bogdan
he's mercurial if nothing
mentioned,
else.
hey, is he a consistent supporter? Well, he's as consistent as he is on all the other things that Adam talked about.
So, I mean, consistency has never been a hallmark, except on tariffs. He has been saying tariffs are good for 20, 30 years. He's been very, and most things from abortion to economic stuff, he's not at all, he's been all over the map. But, and he has been vocally a strong supporter of Israel throughout. I think my way of understanding Trump and Israel, he's an opportunist and a transactional guy who's looking out for himself, not anybody else. If for himself means supporting Netanyahu, then he will. And if
So what
Netanyahu
interest,
by some
what motivates him to, is it his family relations or what motivates him to support Israel?
I think the right in America has been a consistent supporter of Israel,
I mean, America has
at
been a
least
consistent
rhetorically.
ally with NATO and is not anymore.
Yeah,
So it's a
that's
poor
fair.
argument.
NATO's not going to be a reality in 4 years, I don't think. Not in the form that we've known it,
No.
for sure. So let me get back to Israel for a moment, if I may. So I think if by some miracle Netanyahu, for any reason, weren't the head of Israel tomorrow or next year, it could change. I think he has an affinity for strongmen. He says so out loud. He says, "I like strong men." So he has an affinity for it, and I think they're simpatico souls. And I do not for a second think that it has left his mind that maybe Gaza will become a resort owned by America. Don't forget that he suggested that. And Netanyahu at times has used that, as a reason, if not an excuse, to do some of what he's done. So I think, again, it fits a pattern. He thinks in terms of his power and what his sort of legacy is. So he wants Greenland, he wants Canada. Remember, he still wants Panama. He wants a chunk of land in the Middle East to turn into a resort. There's a consistency in that, in his world expansionist worldview, that he wants to be in charge, not just what's in front of him, but what could be. To expand that in a way that we haven't seen in centuries from this country. And as long as that perspective remains and he has a friend in the prime ministership in Israel, he'll be fine. If that changes somehow, different leader, different leadership in Gaza that says, screw Hamas, let's do something democratic, I think that he absolutely could change sides. And we might never know. I mean, hopefully we'll never know. I don't
As long as we're talking about Israel, just a quick comment about Netanyahu himself and his connection with Trump. I believe that Netanyahu's position of leadership in Israel is much, much more entrenched than a lot of people realize, even though it's being questioned, his moves against the judiciary, etc. The voting public in Israel is just not inclined to vote for a left leaning
I think that's
leadership.
probably right.
The
But that
combination
doesn't mean
of
it has to
the
be Netanyahu.
Correct, doesn't mean so, but if he's the prominent one on the right, then he's going to be durable. There's no question in my mind about that. The combination of the religious and ultra-religious, coupled with the Russian immigrants' vote, there's a million people in Israel, voters, who came to Israel after the Soviet Union collapsed. These people will never vote for anything or anybody that so much as smacks of left-leaning. They've had their share of left-leanings. Maybe two generations from now that will change, but not in the foreseeable future. So Netanyahu is pretty well entrenched in Israel. As I said, what concerns me is how entrenched is Trump's support for Israel, as promising as it may sound right now, when it matters, because Israel was really facing a life and death situation, existential threat. So that happens to work for Israel right now. Is that alliance between Trump and Netanyahu durable? That I'm not so sure.
Well, I think your previous point was a critically important one, and that is even if he sticks with them, is the damage being done internationally so counter to Israel's interests that it could be a wash, and whether the U.S.
Yeah,
supports
that
it
is
or
a
not.
concern, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a very smart observation.
So, next topic, you mentioned Ukraine. What is your comment on Ukraine and American policies toward Ukraine?
Well, let me reflect on it. Having grown up in next door to Ukraine, in Poland, has a lot of bearing on how I view the whole Ukrainian picture. My heart is not bleeding exactly for Ukraine, for obvious reasons. But as far as what happens now, three generations after the Holocaust, it's pretty clear that Ukraine is a victim in this Russian Ukrainian conflict, and I feel like there's no alternative but to support the Ukrainian position, Ukrainian sovereignty, and it actually hurts me to see Trump navigate that situation by favoring the Russian point of view.
Well, he says Ukraine started the war. I mean, straight up. It's again, how often can you use the words bizarre and unprecedented? But it's just odd. The evidence is right before our eyes. But if you watch some networks in this country, Ukraine started the war. But the consequences are obviously beyond Ukraine, right? I mean, if Putin feels like he can go, if Putin gets a good deal, because it's a deal, right? That's how Trump maneuvers this stuff. A peace treaty will be a deal that he's cutting. If that deal is favorable to Putin, and I think the evidence is it will be, but we'll see whether there is a deal at all. Putin's going to feel empowered.
Yeah, and go
I think
after
it's
the
fair
rest
to,
of Europe.
I don't think he goes after Poland. That would be pretty brazen. And there is still some semblance of NATO for at least the next few years. But smaller countries, sure,
yeah.
Why not? Who's going? Trump going to send troops against Putin? if that invasion had taken place on Trump's watch, you think there'd still be a war right now?
I think there's a good deal of uneasiness in Poland
A
about the
great deal.
And they should feel uneasy.
about being
And they do.
potentially on Putin's side.
Absolutely.
Yes.
If fear, confusion, and anxiety are the common denominators. You pick the country.
He promised it would
And this
change
is,
it.
and he likes that. He does that. Only, remember, he kept saying, only I can solve the problem.
In one day.
In one day, he's gonna, the economy in America,
On
inflation's
the
gonna go away.
first day, on the first
First do camera.
economy is gonna be booming on day one, and the war in Ukraine is gonna be over on day one. To Joanna's constant question and the correct one, how can this be happening?
We have more problems. What is Iran?
Oh, Iran. Yeah,
Yeah.
we got get ready for fireworks.
Yeah. So, what does American public think about Iran? What is
I bet not 5% of the American public even has an opinion.
Okay.
They're very busy with the price of eggs and with the stock market and with their own lives and with their own rights. And, people are dealing with things that, again, aren't, they're 2-week-old stories, so they aren't even in the news, but they make a difference. So, college aid is diminishing and some programs are going away. That means people without funds, you can't send their kids to college. Work study programs are being cut. That's how some people without money went to college. People are dealing with, I think, and to Alan's point about why did Trump win, some anti-democratic sentiment, some economics, a lot of factors. But none of them were, how do you feel about Iran? Not a one. It wasn't on people's radar. They might have feelings about it one way or another. It doesn't rise to the level of this impacts
Acting
my
on it,
thinking about
yeah.
this administration. I don't think so.
Does
I don't
Israel
know, but I don't think so.
Question has the same place in people's minds? Because we are obviously interested in Israel. How about the general public? Do they
I think
care?
no different from the way Adam described it. People in the United States, when it comes to election and voting, are just totally consumed by local economic issues.
With a
The
caveat.
broader economic issues come into play only insofar as they impact the local economic issues.
With a caveat, Iran does not have a constituency in the U.S., so to speak. Israel does. Palestinians do. They have, some number of hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are like you, Alan, and me too. Who focus on this issue, who care about this issue, Israel and the Palestinian questions. And they do, and one reason why Trump won Michigan without question, is the Democrats not being unequivocal enough in support of Netanyahu against the Palestinians. It has a huge Arab and Palestinian and Muslim population, and it may and statistically it made a difference in a whole state and its vote,
Yes,
its
it's about
electoral votes.
marginals.
So there are they these so I agree with you in the main. It's not the sort of the big overlaying issue, but for some people, some real sizable constituency minority, it really matters. And for young people, the polling is off the charts. Young people didn't vote, and again, consequential, because in some races it's close enough that if young people had voted another way or had voted at all, because some just abstained, it would have changed the outcome. And they are, the young people are getting their news from TikTok, from other sources that are all Palestinian all the time, and I'm not taking a stand on which side, what's right or wrong, but that part is true. And their views are very anti-Israel. And that did have some consequences electorally.
So, where do you see United States in 2 years? There will be some elections for Congress or the other chamber?
For both houses of Congress.
Yeah, in 2 years. Do you think that there will be a Democratic majority? Do you think the Democratic Party can pull their act together and kind of mobilize the troops so they can get some majority in these chambers and influence the policies?
It's hard to say. We live, my brother Adam, myself, in the East Coast region in proximity of Washington, D.C. The population in this region of the country is much more directly impacted by everything we discussed in this conversation here. But the deeper you get into the interior of the country, the further away from people's mind are these international issues, realistically. So whether it's Israel or Ukraine, etc., it doesn't come close to the factors that impact, say, the agricultural community.
Okay, but still
farmers,
the tariffs, they affect prices.
Yeah, 100%.
They affect the
price. It's a great example. Farmers in America rely on China. Farmers, last time around, the first Trump presidency, he also imposed tariffs on China, and they started to have a really significant impact on farmers. So Trump paid off farmers. I mean, literally, it started a program to subsidize farmers. So the blow was not a blow. You know, they did the tariffs, but they had other income coming from the federal government. And the thinking is that he's going to do that again, again, which will consume some amount of funding from the federal government. But without it, China will send its grain somewhere else. You know, will send and the farmers in America who are sending their grain to other countries aren't going to have quite as friendly a reception because of the other factors that we're talking about, and because of tariffs. So farmers are between a rock and a hard place, potentially, depending on the tariffs and how they're carried out and what he decides tomorrow and what stock market and what grain futures do. And I mean, there's so many variables. But at the bottom line, American goods are going to be more expensive in other countries because there's a 10% tariff internationally on everybody. And they're not going to just ignore that. They're going to find other markets. And China is an awfully good market. It's an awful lot of people. Very tempting to lots of countries that have been dealing with the U.S. instead because of politics. Well, the politics have changed.
So I have heard a theory that it might happen in the long run if America imposes the tariffs on the countries, that they will find each other's markets around the United States, that the commodities will go not to United States and to, they will go between China and Europe and Asia. Like this market will be omitted as much as possible. And this could impoverish the industry and also the farmers. What do you think about that? Do you think it's a possibility?
It's a very unhappy prospect. I hope it doesn't come to anything concrete.
I don't understand the scenario in which it has no impact. Maybe it has less impact than we expect. Maybe it's different than we expect, and there are some benefits as well as problems, but it's not going to have no impact. That it's just not feasible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. Life doesn't work that way. So I think that, again, to a previous question, what's going to happen in the election in 2 years is by the way, in a year and a half, is unbelievably consequential. If the Democrats were to take the House and the Senate, then they could maybe put the brakes on. But we're talking about the brakes after 2 years of Trump. We're not talking about tomorrow morning. We're not 100 days in. He's not going to stop. He's going to keep doing stuff for that two-year period. And when I say put the brakes on wherever we are at that point, not where we are today. Mm-hmm. And if they don't find that message, and if Americans aren't angry enough and upset enough, you know, by price hikes or authoritarianism or all of this mishigas, if they're not, and he manages to keep the Congress, then all bets are off. I mean, that will be permission to do whatever he wants. Yeah. I mean,
we may want to think about having the same conversation 2 years from now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
100%. If we're permitted to do so. I mean, we will be permitted to do so. I don't think it's going to get that bad. But right now, lots of academic freedom is being impinged on. Money is being tied to what you say in the classroom rather than what, you know, your books teach you to tell students. I mean, literally.
And that people are not allowed into the United States.
The media is being controlled to some extent from the White House, who can ask questions to whom and when. And, you know, there are literally right-wing bloggers who are filling the seats that the Associated Press used to fill. They get to ask questions instead of, you know, sort of legit journalists. Mm-hmm. All that will have an impact over time. Mm-hmm. I don't see how it cannot. And I think there are lots of people. I read this morning, there was some professors who didn't publish a paper. A paper had been vetted, ready for publication, the peer reviewed, the whole thing, because they were afraid of retribution from the government. I mean, this all has an impact on what people say and how they say it. That could grow. That really could grow. People are afraid.
It's quite terrifying for you and also for us. I think that we are getting close to the end of our
the closure
program. So I'd like to thank you, Alan and Adam Pertman, for your participation. It was very interesting and extremely enlightening, and also a little bit depressing. So I'd like to wish you good Pesach.
And I'd like to say to Alan, he is welcome to tell us about the tour in Poland. He is going to Poland in May. I'm correct, Alan?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So when you are coming home, I hope we can speak about the tour in Poland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank
Yeah, indeed. That's the exhibit of 1945. Not the beginning and not the end, the reconstitution of Jewish life in Poland after the Holocaust. And by the way, my mother and family is part of that exhibit. Mm-hmm.
So we'll be coming back to you. Thank you very much. And have a good day.
You're welcome.
And good weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Good Pesach. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Adek, thank you. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you, bud.
You bet.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.